is a presentation of the Match Talk Podcast Network.
Hello, wrestling fans. It's time for the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource was made that you as a wrestler, parent, coach, or fan can have access to all the resources of the very best in the world of wrestling. I'm three-time wrestling writer and broadcaster of the year, Jason Bryant, and I want you to join me, along with John McGovern and world champions Terry Brands and Dennis Hall, as we talk training tips, topical discussion, mental preparation, and more on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource is sponsored by Defense Soap. Find World Wrestling Resource on Facebook at facebook.com/World Wrestling Resource and follow us on Twitter at WWRESO and, of course, on the web at worldwrestlingresource.com. Now on to the show as we join John McGovern, Terry Brands, and Dennis Hall.
And welcome back, wrestling fans. Episode 56 of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. Jason Bryant here with you yet again. And on this show, of course, we talk about the world of wrestling. The world of wrestling in the sense of being the world of wrestling, and of course, resources, which as this show talks about resources that you can work within your wrestling program or within the sport of wrestling. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Defense Soap. Defend what you have built. You can find more about Defense Soap at DefenseSoap.com or go back to episode 54 as we talk to Guy Seiko, the founder of Defense Soap, at WWRPodcast.com. Second episode down, episode 54. Today, though, we are talking sports training, coaching, innovations, technology, all of those things with John Lally. He's the president and CEO of Pivot Global Sports, which is the North American distributor for First Beat, which is the product we're going to be talking about today. First of all, John, welcome to the program and welcome to the World Wrestling Resource.
Jason, thanks for having me.
So let's just get right to it. In terms of technology and sports, before we even find out what First Beat is, the mindset of athletes getting bigger, stronger, and faster, technology has rolled with this, and we've seen a rise of records being broken and better performance with erratic seasons, with how scheduling works. And in short, what is the mindset behind where technology is taking training?
Well, from our standpoint, we believe that there's a lot to be gained in understanding not just the details of individual athletes' response, but making sure that as a coach or coaching staff, we understand all of our athletes individually. So I guess to sum that up, it would be as sports become more competitive and athletes get bigger, faster, stronger in many ways, we believe that monitoring physiological load can give us added detail into the development and progress of individual athletes. And then the next step would be individualized training.
And with that individualized training comes First Beat, which is it's not necessarily just a product. It's kind of a whole comprehensive service that you guys offer.
Correct. I think we would love to believe that the offering, which we refer to as First Beat Sports, and the team pack. So essentially there are two parts. There's the equipment you wear and the equipment to collect data from the wearable. And then there's the software that provides the analytics and the reporting. So to your point, Jason, we'd like to think that it is a product that can be used once it's delivered to a team by the staff and for the athletes without exorbitant guidance from us. However, the truth of all software and technology is that there are different levels of implementing it, different levels of understanding, and we want to be there to provide insight and guidance for those teams that need that further level of guidance and insight. So for certain, I spent 200 days on the road in 2017 consulting, working directly with teams from the Chicago Bulls to Princeton Wrestling to implement our technology and to further understand the data and the analytics we provide.
So it's probably a more comprehensive product than it is a comprehensive service. You've got the setup, the hands-on, you teach them how to do it. So I guess I'm wrong in my initial assumption that it truly is a product that, you know, you guys, you teach them how to do it, and then all of a sudden they can look at the data how they want and see where certain individuals are gaining and certain individuals are not.
100%. Exactly right. We want with a little push off, let's say, I would say, you know, more than 60-70% of the teams with a three-day in-service consultation, professional development, whatever you want to call it, that's the push they need to have enough momentum to be off and running and to be utilizing the First Beat sports software and team system effectively with their teams and athletes. Now, of course, we like to be there once a year to when updates come, when new data comes, when there's new analytics. You know, if I can circle back to the introductory question about where are we going with technology in sport, I think the sky is really the limit. And although competitiveness and performances are now separated so finely, there's always new ways of pushing the envelope and better understanding how to make progress without sacrificing or putting athletes in jeopardy. So that's my point there is that each and every year we want to have updates that are pushing our envelope of delivering usable and essential information for teams and athletes that use First.
Now, your background in terms of this company goes, you're not a wrestling guy, but you've had the influence and the infiltration into wrestling. You talked about Princeton. Of course, you said you've also had, before we started, you've talked with Penn State and the University of the Cumberlands. And why is wrestling a sport that you think that can really benefit from First Beat?
Well, yeah, and if I can back up and give you a little depth of my history, just so we tie it into that, the answer to that question. I started out as most kids in this country, I would say, you know, loving, you know, basketball, soccer, big team, traditional sports. And I found myself rowing competitively in a boarding school on the East Coast. And rowing is a tremendous output or, let's say, capacity sport, which just means that data heart rate is essential to maximizing your potential as a rower. And I, you know, there began my quest to understand aerobic capacity, maximizing my VO2 max, efficiency, building efficiency at certain outputs, economy, all these things that go into the physiology of sport. And I believe that wrestling is also tremendously important to maximize the athlete's ability to do work. Because that, at the end of the day, if I'm on the mat with another guy and our technique is close and our will to win is close, one of the dividing or one of the most important factors is going to be which athlete can not fatigue the fastest. So my exposure to wrestling with Princeton and with through one of my experts in the field that handled Penn State and University of Cumberland has only, you know, redefined that understanding of, wow, what an unbelievable contest of all those factors I just mentioned, not just technique, not just will and focus, but then, of course, the athlete's individual maximum capacity and efficiency to be able to do productive, effective wrestling moves at a heart rate that's not going to fatigue him to the point of not being able to execute. So again, that's the beauty of this system is it's going to allow athletes to understand their development and their capacity improvements. When we improve capacity and efficiency, we do work more easily. When we do work more easily, I'm going to be better day after day, week after week, all the way through the NCAAs or the Worlds or whatever our final goal is.
Now, this terminology being thrown around and when you're in the industry, things like VO2 max, for example, are commonplace, but for those who are unfamiliar with what you're talking about, explain some of the terminology when you guys are explaining VO2 max and high output, that type of thing.
Yeah, sure. Well, essentially, you know, when we come into this earth, we have certain abilities that are God-given or just given, depending on your overriding set of beliefs. And one of those is maximal capacity or VO2 max. That's an athlete's ability to utilize oxygen at max effort. So the higher that level, and that's defined in milliliters per kilogram per minute. So it's a rate of oxygen uptake. So that is trainable. We know that's trainable. Most coaches and athletes out there know that's trainable. It's trainable to most research shows around 15%, maybe 20%, maybe some people believe a little more. So what we can also train is our efficiency. And efficiency can be described in many ways, but one of them would be anaerobic or ventilatory threshold. So that's another value that's somewhere below the VO2 max. So I'll give you a tangible example for all those out there. If I'm a cyclist and my heart rate max is 200 beats per minute, and I start my training as a relatively new cyclist, my efficiency level or ventilatory threshold or anaerobic threshold might be at 150 beats. But through proper training, I can lift that threshold, that efficiency threshold, that 150 beats per minute, all the way up very close to my maximum beats per minute. Okay, and that's also the max beats per minute, not to be confused with VO2 max. That's going to be over, you know, over the VO2 max beats per minute level. But the point is, these values, this efficiency level, which we're calling anaerobic threshold and ventilatory threshold, is trainable. And you can train that better, faster, more effectively when you use heart rate to guide the intervals or to guide the work loading in the wrestling terminology, the live portion of the workout. So yeah, VO2 max, maximal oxygen uptake, the max capacity to do work with oxygen before you go into anaerobic energy system, which is without oxygen. So we want to lift that level to build efficiency, to build capacity to do work without fatiguing. Similarly, we want to lift the level that we're calling anaerobic threshold as close to that VO2 max as we can get it, so that the athlete can handle stress, work, demands more easily, more efficiently.
In the website, you can go to firstbeat.com to check out some of the team solutions you guys offer. Now, one thing that jumped out at me is you've got wrestling, which is all shapes and body sources, versus, as you talked about, sprinters and cyclists and rowers that have, they're all kind of basically the same kind of athlete. How have you taken your experiences with team sports and molded them into individual sports where you have different weight classes and shapes and sizes that affect the output?
Sure. Well, I would say that hockey, NHL, is similar to wrestling in that way that, you know, I see guys. I was at Detroit Red Wings training camp the last four, the development camp for the younger guys, and then the main camp, which is for the professional team. And I see guys that are built like rowers or swimmers in there. So 6'5", long and lean, 6'5", 195, 6'6", 200. And then I see some tremendously skilled, fast, explosive players, which are all terms that I would parallel to wrestling athletes. And I see them at 5'7", 5'8", 180, strong legs, you know, low center of mass. So hockey, I would say, has a wide range of types of athletes. And bringing this full circle to our discussion of VO2 max and anaerobic threshold, you know, not everybody has to have a high VO2 max to be a successful athlete. And that just has to do with explosive muscle fiber, explosiveness in the athlete versus endurance muscle fiber and endurance capacity. So we just want to maximize the optimal level of where that split lies between anaerobic power and aerobic efficiency. So the point there, Jason, is in the NHL, where I spend a lot of time, we have both kinds of athletes, aerobic, endurance-based that are very, very successful, and highly anaerobic, less efficient aerobically. So for those reasons, I think that grouping of athletes in the NHL is similar to the way that wrestling can be approached by different types of athletic, let's say, systems or bodies or physiologies. If we go to the NBA, it's a little bit different. We have, as everybody out there knows listening, it's tremendously important to be long and tall in the NBA. So that's going to be a defining factor of the athletes. And the energy systems are going to be pretty high on the capacity side, but also speed and power and anaerobic power is very important. Soccer, trending more toward a guy who can run a lot, so bigger capacities on that side. VO2 max is over, you know, over 55 mils per kill, for sure, and many over 60 and some over 65, which are 65 to 70 is approaching very high VO2 max levels for, you know, heading toward the world-class endurance athletes. And rowing, as you said, Jason, rowing is a sport that is tremendously dependent on length and aerobic capacity. So we need power, but we need to also be able to have tremendous aerobic maximal capacity. And we need some long, tall athletes. So, you know, most elite rowers are now, I'd say the lowest level is 6 feet, 6'1", 6'2", but I'd say the average in an elite heavyweight men's crew, 6'4 to 6'5, and some guys are always 6'5, 6'7.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing on how some of those things work and how, you know, I don't have any knowledge of rowing other than where I went to college. They added it a couple years after I graduated. So, but one thing is those events. In wrestling, we have the terminology, we have the quick-twitch athletes, and then we have the grinding type of athletes. With this data, that's what I'm kind of getting at with this series of questions is, how can Princeton Wrestling, for example, that you have them as a client, or Penn State Wrestling, or University of Cumberland's Wrestling, look at how their 125-pounder, who may be short, stocky, and likes the double legs, he is an explosive type of athlete, he has that quick twitch type of tone, versus like a lanky leg wrestler at 174 who's wiry and doesn't have that same, he can't hit a double leg the same way the 125-pounder goes. How do you take that data for each individual athlete, and how is the coach and the sports science or team doctors or whoever that looks at this data, how are they supposed to analyze this and be like, okay, we've got a team training here. How do you tailor it for an individual, but also how do you keep that individual training in the whole group of a team practice?
Yeah, great question. And I'll try to be very specific with how this can apply. I know John McGovern and you need this to, we want to pinpoint it to wrestling, and it's a fantastic question. So what we provide for every workout is we provide the aerobic training effect and the anaerobic training effect. So let's take the example, let's say I'm a wrestler on the team and I'm a long aerobic grinder type guy. And this is how I would use our feedback in a training session to maximize my development, or any athlete out there who's a longer, leaner aerobic, so good capacity, but more of a grinder. So maybe I'm lacking some of that explosive energy system that needs to be developed to be more effective with those quick, aggressive moves, right? So this is how you use it. We do a session and we see that most of my training effect, let's say I come in as a freshman and you don't even know what kind of athlete I am, except of course the coaches are going to have the eye test and they're going to draw some conclusions and they'll probably see some tape. So now, the data will come back the following. A workout goes down and you get a training effect score. The training effect score describes the effort or how hard the session was. But to understand the energy system development from that training, we give you two data numbers. We give you, based on 100%, what percentage of the session was anaerobic or based on high intensity intervals, and what percentage was based on aerobic or, you know, that endurance capacity improvement type of session. So what you're going to see is, in a hard session, athletes tend to do work where they're most comfortable, where they like to live, where their body is best, where the physiology exists most effectively. So if I'm a long, lean aerobic guy, my workout without any guidance and coaching is going to come back predominantly aerobic training effect, provided I'm in decent shape, okay, provided I'm not in terrible shape. So if I'm in decent shape, I'm going to do work aerobically, I'm going to grind, I'm going to exhibit my natural tendency. So here's the kicker. Let's say it comes back 75% aerobic training effect, 25% anaerobic. Then the coach can try to design the next session to emphasize and stimulate more of the anaerobic energy system development. If that means shortening up the bouts, if that means asking to do certain kinds of work, whether it's, you know, all the different positions you guys have, what we want to do is ultimately, again, develop explosive movement patterns and the ability to do work with high intensity, So we're going to want to see those high intensity bouts. What will happen if we've designed the session correctly to let's say, create more balance in that athlete, the session data, the report will come back and show 35, 40, 50% anaerobic energy system development. And then we walk away, and then we, of course, see the effect on the athlete's, responsiveness. So how do you feel? Do you feel different? What's the changes in the way you're feeling? And then we look to see if there are improvements on the performance side of executing those types of movements. So again, to summarize that, we give aerobic energy system percentage of training effect, and we give anaerobic energy system percentage of training effect. And this can be used to tailor the kinds of workouts that are best suited to different types of athletes. So if we want to develop speed and power and aggressiveness or explosiveness in an athlete, we want to see a workout that has a larger percentage than normal for that athlete of anaerobic energy system. And vice versa, if we have kids that are really explosive, really fast, but they burn out, they're done and they're getting fatigued and they're starting to make mistakes, then we need to focus on workouts that increase the aerobic energy system development. So you can see exactly the biofeedback that is the result of the kind of session you're trying to build.
When it comes to coaching these athletes and putting this data to work, and as you said, we've got the practice plan. We know what the athlete now needs. Let's swing back on the benefits. On what's the wheelhouse for first speed? Is it college and elite level stuff, or can this trickle down to even high school and middle school stuff? Because it seems everybody today is fine with a wearable. I've got an Apple Watch on right now. I've had a Fitbit. Wearables are not weird for anybody anymore. So going through a workout wearing one may not be so abnormal anymore. So who could benefit from using the first speed?
Yeah, great question. I think our wheelhouse is elite sports. So we'll define elite sports as professional teams, national teams, and elite college programs. Okay, that's our wheelhouse. The reason being, first beat, we hang our hat on the analytics. I safely say to everybody, I'll cite a few names here and references. We were the best in the world at estimating epoch-based training load from heart rate, and we're the best in the world, at analyzing HRV for readiness. So we've been talking this whole 30 minutes about training load, about how to evaluate athletes based on the biofeedback we give for training load. So that's the training effect score, the 1 to 5 scaled score for how hard the session was for an individual athlete. That's our TRIMP, our training impulse, which models blood lactate accumulation in a session. Both of those numbers define training load. And across the board, you're going to see, in some cases, a wide variety of responses to the same session. And that's when we want to be able to look at the data and start individualizing the training for each athlete so that each athlete gets the desirable response from each session. So the wheelhouse being elite sports is because we hang our hats on being reliable and being lab accurate. And lab accurate and reliability is not an easy thing in the wearable world. Our founders, again, wrote the book on epoch-based training effect. You know, so we have a lot of white papers, a lot of research that defines who we are and the lab accuracy of our data and our research. A guy by the name of Heikki Rusko, one of the founders and sits on the board, a Finnish expert in heart rate variability, field testing. There are some universities in this country that don't have a wearable yet that still use Heikki Rusko's field-based measurement system for estimating athlete readiness in the field from heart rate. So tremendous, tremendous experience, validation, and research allows us to be with the top teams in the world, from Liverpool, again, to Chicago Bulls, to New York Rangers, to Seattle Sounders. So really elite users. Now, to your second point, Jason, a very good one and one that I love to participate in, high schools, kids, why is it important? Well, one of the most important things that you can gather or learn from a heart rate monitor is motivation. And, you know, motivation comes quickly and easily when you're in a program, a wrestling program or a rowing program or any sport that is challenging in that way, where it's you out there doing work, and you're gonna be. There's lots of ways to measure and watch and see the output and the effort of an athlete wrestling or rowing. Whereas, you know, my point there is that in some skilled sports, baseball and soccer and basketball, you can get by on skill and technique for a long time until you really need to, you know, until you really, really need to compete. Then effort and fitness improvement and efficiency become essential in those sports too. Rowing and wrestling, it's coming hard. It's coming fast. You better be ready. You better have a will to compete, and you do need to work on fitness. So with kids, with physical education, with young people, what I love to see with a heart rate monitor is the ability to encourage effort, the ability for them to link their own heart rate response to the effort they're putting out, and to be excited and uplifted by the ability to go to certain colors, the emotional response to seeing colors that are associated with certain heart rate levels. The understanding that achieving a 3.0 training effect means they improved their fitness level or their capacity to resist fatigue. So by linking heart rate to effort and then to rewarding effort with reporting or color or training effect scores to ignite a fire in young people that show them that, you know what, you can get better by hard work. That's a tremendous payback for me as a technologist, as a salesperson, as a coach and an athlete, for anybody looking to improve.
Moving forward, as the growth of this industry comes around, I kind of touched on that with wearables. Having spent time at the Olympic Training Center working with USA Wrestling, we saw the technology in place with cameras and programs like Dartfish that look and analyze maybe the technical aspect of practice and training. Where has the synergy been with an organization and a product like First Beat with those other technological advances we're seeing with video analysis and stuff? I mean, how have they all worked together with y'all's respective industries?
Yeah, sure. Well, I think one of the biggest movements in the wearable industry right now is being able to integrate different systems, because with integration, we get a clearer picture. So I'll give you an example. If we're tracking the internal load, which is what First Beat does, we're internal load monitoring, so physiological response to work, heart rate. And we have another system out there, like a Dartfish or any of the speed and distance monitors that exist, which provide external loading. And Dartfish isn't, let me correct that, they're not looking at external load. They're looking at biomechanics and technique and movement patterns. But if we're going to get a full picture of an athlete's response to a game or to a training session, it can be amplified. Let's say the picture can be amplified if we combine both the internal and the external load. So that's the next step, is saying, well, we see that there was a big training effect. We see there was an enormous effort. And with that effort monitored by First Beat, there's going to be potentially some fatigue. And we're gonna measure the heart rate variability, the readiness the next morning to see if there's fatigue. But why was there a big effort? So then we can look at how much distance was covered, how many impacts that athlete had if we have a speed and distance monitoring system. And we can combine the two. So was there an extra amount of distance run or more jumps taken, more impacts taken that make that physiological load make sense? And if there was, that's an important takeaway. Does the extra running, does the extra accelerations or higher speed running define that training effect score that we saw from the internal load? And if it doesn't, that's a huge takeaway too. Then why is the athlete exhibiting such a big training load? Is there a lack of fitness? Is there a movement pattern deficiency? Are there compensations happening? So you see how the two can work together to give much more insight into the overall reason for an athlete's response. So some things, I always say this when we're looking at heart rate. Heart rate should make sense. The physiological feedback or the training load from a training session should make sense. And I would say many, many times with the team, it does. You look at a response, you say, yep, I see the peaks, I see the valleys, and I like them. They make sense. The high score for training load, the medium score, the low score makes sense. It's when it doesn't make sense that we dig a little deeper and look at why there's a change in the response. So these changes in response can be extremely meaningful. They can mean that the athlete is fatigued. The athlete has something going on that's leading to a different response. So that's what we're looking for. So with speed and distance and heart rate, or analysis from biomechanics, the biomechanical analysis that you described from a dartfish system, we can link different pieces of the overall picture to better understand what direction our guys are going in. So important too. It just led me to a thought, you know, again, back to my story about heart rate, and it should make sense. What's very, very important too is to not look at this on a microscopic level. What we really want to focus on is the trend of our athletes. So if I have an athlete that exhibits an unusual response one day by a little bit, it's not something that I'm going to change the whole training plan around. But the next day, if they continue the trend differently in a pattern that's unique and different, and the following day the same thing, and the quick recovery score corroborates that change in trend, that's when we look to make an intervention to change the work loading, to look at recovery, sleep, and all the different important relevant questions we can ask the athlete to find out what's caused the change. The trends are so essential to understanding, you know, what's happening.
One thing I am curious about, as you've gotten into wrestling with the three programs you mentioned, what have you learned, and what has your company and First Beat learned about wrestling and how that can help you improve your product?
Yeah, good question there. I think the one thing we've learned, and I've been working on this for at least 5 years now, if not more, and wrestling, you know, brought it to light once again. This is from an equipment standpoint. Wearables have to be seamlessly integrated into the athlete's normal training routines. And what I mean by that is it's extremely important that the heart rate monitor be looked at as a piece of equipment. The same way a wrestler wears headgear, the same way they wear a singlet, the same way they have specific shoes, they lace those shoes up every day, those shoes break down, they get new ones. The heart rate monitor is no different, okay? So we need to treat it as equipment. And the reason behind that is that we don't want athletes and coaches to lose sight of the fact that we have to take care of equipment, replace it. It has to, you know, be worn every day so that the data is establishing trends. But also from our standpoint, from a company standpoint, what I saw in wrestling and combat sports, I've worked with some MMA guys for more than a decade now, and they know this too, and we know it from them. We've got to make the equipment integrated into the uniform, into the kit, so that the guys go on and they're putting on their singlet and it's already in there. We want to make things simple, efficient, easy, so that it's not a burden. So that's the next phase for the heart rate monitor, the evolution of the equipment, so that it's not a separate piece that we have to wear and change and wash, but it can be integrated into the clothing. The technology's there to do it. We're ready to do it. We have prototypes. It just has to be refined and defined a little bit more effectively so that it's accurate in the clothing. You know, again, I go back to it has to be viewed as equipment because we want it to be utilized as a standalone piece as it is now. I just saw that in wrestling and combat sports, the monitor can be pulled off, can come down, can fall off, can break. The good thing about heart rate data, Jason, is we're still going to get a very good picture provided that athlete puts it back on like they would put back their headgear or lace up their shoes again. So that's the takeaway is treat it like equipment. But on our side, on the development side of equipment, on the company side, we want to make that thing sleek. You don't even know it's there, not a bother, and integrated as best we can. So that's one thing. What else? I think the new data, the aerobic, anaerobic energy system defined by our sports software, is pretty huge. It's a new data point we released about a year and a half ago. And I think that's very critical to sports like wrestling so that we know where athletes like to be and we know where we can develop their skill sets and their physiology. But I think maybe the biggest thing is looking for new ways to enhance the data we provide and the way it's the story it tells. So, you know, possibly the biggest variable in physiological monitoring right now in elite sports, wrestling included, would be the quick recovery test that we provide. In 3 minutes, I can have your whole team, Jason, lie down, relax, go through whatever mental work they want to do. And in 3 minutes, I can gauge each athlete's parasympathetic response. And when we know the HRV, the heart rate variability, or the quality of that parasympathetic response to rest, that is a very good indicator of level of recovery. So that's a huge, huge variable that we measure with an excellent scaled score. Is our, you know, our, we call it the quick recovery measurement, quick recovery test. 3 minutes resting HRV analysis. Every athlete gets a scaled score. And we what that tells us really is just how they're recovering in the night after the prior 3, 4, 5 days of work, of training, of school, of activity. Where they are now in terms of that rest and digest, that balance of the parasympathetic versus the sympathetic. So, if I can summarize and circle back, because I know I'm being a little long-winded here, adding important data points and adding essential and critical delivery of those data points to coaches so that they can utilize our product in the best way with their team.
You use the word recovery, and that also has a different meaning within the sport of wrestling. A lot of it's when, with a weight class sport, you're coming off the scale, your body is recovering, it's rehydrating. 2 hours for a college tournament, 1 hour for a college weigh-in. Have you guys done any type of testing or monitoring of athletes after they're coming off the scale in terms of how they recover that way right before competition? That seems like something that would, as a wrestling person, be like, wow, it'd be interesting to know how different people react to different weight cuts, for example.
Oh yeah, that sounds super interesting. We haven't done that yet. I'd be willing to bet that you know, Chris Ayers out at Princeton or the Penn State staff or the University of Cumberland staff might have looked at the HRV when they're coming off the scale. Being that there's such a short time window, you know, maybe they haven't, but it's something to think about, because what I'm willing to bet is some athletes handle that better than others. And that could be a defining variable to look at for how they're going to perform after, let's say, an extreme weight cut. Because basically, HRV and the quick recovery is a measure of resiliency. So I'll give you an example here. We had a Chicago Bulls player come back after back-to-back games. They flew all night. They landed the plane, and he went straight to the practice facility, and his wife had just had a baby. And he took the quick recovery test, and his score was good. Is very good. And they called me right away and said, how can this be? What's going on? You know, this athlete clearly has a lot of stress and demands being placed on him right now. Why is he showing high on your measurement? We looked at the data. We analyzed the quality of the reading. The error was low. The quality was good. And that indicates resiliency. And that's, again, if we go back to some of the things that we're blessed with as human beings, some people are more resilient than others. So if I can come around to your question, the reason resiliency and measuring resiliency is so important, especially in a sport where there are rigorous weight cuts, some athletes can handle that very well and some won't handle it as well. So what we want to do is make sure that we're supporting the ones that can't handle it that well, and also letting the ones that can handle that weight cut well know that you're fine from a physiology standpoint, your balance is good. So that's a very empowering thing to see. When I go out to train after 3 hard sessions in a row and my resiliency score, my quick recovery test is good, that's super empowering to go after it hard and have a good session. So I think it would be very cool to start looking at that, or supporting our teams that want to look at that measurement after the weight cut.
It's just crazy to me to think about the technology that exists these days. And as we talked about prior to starting a call, this is a relatively young company, and the technology changes almost hour by hour. There's a lot of science involved. There's a lot of numbers, way too many numbers and acronyms for me to want to keep up with. The only numbers and acronyms I'm worried about are rankings and the letters NCAA, NAIA, et cetera. So I definitely, my hat's off to you guys and how companies like yours and with Pivot are bringing these type of technologies to sports that aren't just the superstar sports. It's your Olympic sports that, you know, once every 4 years they get the glitz and glam, and then they're gone for 3 years and then they come back. So it's not just the professional sports that you guys are supporting. The Olympic sports, rowing is not a very glamorous sport when it comes to television. You don't really even get that much Olympic coverage. So I definitely appreciate the, you know, being there for the athletes in terms of what you guys can do for the athletes. And as we wrap up here on episode 56 of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast, again, you can find out more about John's company at firstbeat.com. Anything else that they can find on the website that'll answer more questions that they may have if they're interested in bringing this product to their wrestling room or their training facility, or maybe CrossFit gyms, any type of place that this place can fit in with elite or soon or want to be elite athletes.
Well, yeah, I would just say that First Beat has a tremendous website. That's one of our strengths, is putting the information out there. We definitely believe in having an open dialogue of how we make calculations. And you know, Jason, interesting to your point when you talk about NCAA and NAIA, you know, all these numbers that I've been talking about, whether it's training effect or trim or VO2 or threshold or QRT, they're no more complicated than Kcal. And for all those out there, Kcal is just calories burned, energy expenditure. We all are familiar with calories burned or energy expenditure because we all eat food and they mark it on every package. All the numbers I'm speaking to you guys about, and I want coaches to be familiar with and athletes to believe in, are just as simple once you use them in practice. The website is tremendous. The research is all on there. The white papers, they're called. The teams that we work with are all on there. And some of our testimonials from San Jose Sharks hockey that I work with, to some of the Princeton teams that we work with very closely, and other collegiate teams. University of Wisconsin is a powerhouse school for us. We have 5-6 teams up there. But my final point would just be that teams, coaches, athletes out there that have interest, reach out to me at Pivot Sports, and you can disseminate that information as you like to, Jason, emails and phone numbers. But I'm happy to discuss, talk, and demo our system with interested parties, because that's, we believe in feet on the ground. I believe in spending time with teams and athletes to better tailor our products and just to learn from the guys in the field. So excellent website, Pivot Sports. If you want more information, please disseminate my information, Jason, and we will look forward to helping many more wrestling teams out there in the future.
Subscribe to the World Wrestling Resource Podcast by going to WWRpodcast.com and check it out on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spreaker, or wherever you find your podcasts. World Wrestling Resource at worldwrestlingresource.com.
This show is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.